the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast is just two guys and maybe a guest or two discussing Bitcoin, Bitcoin equities, and the related macroeconomic space. It's not meant to be financial advice, so please, if you're doing any investing after listening to our program, do your own research, do your own due diligence, and understand that any money you invest can be lost. The show is meant for entertainment purposes only, and we hope you enjoy the program.
That's good. 1 hour, 12 seconds. We got some honkers tonight. Like, I don't know what you got, but I got some fucking honkers. Some real good
Somebody's
ones.
Asking you to show my man bun. Buddy, I have short hair, man. There's no man bun here to be had. I shaved my head last year, if you recall. Back in the archives, so there's no way that hair could grow that fast. But anyways, stories you have, are they Clown World International?
They're or North.
Clown World North.
They're North. Yeah.
So save
North.
Them for the North section. Let's talk about Clown World International.
We can
talk
sure.
about briefly about China, because there's always something about China these days, and it's peak fiat, because you know we talked about the stopping of the short sells over there. Gotta love that. But now they're going to be proposing to pump liquidity, massive amounts of liquidity, into the markets as a way to alleviate the downward spiral that's going on over there. And I honestly don't get it, Joey. I honestly don't fucking get it, because there is a mountain of evidence out there to support why this is a bad play. Yet these guys keep going back to the well over and over again, even though the water fucking stinks. They go there and they drink it, and then they have the runs at the end. Why do they keep doing this? This is going to be a temporary fix, if anything. So yeah. When they announced that the markets rebounded significantly, well, not several percent. So
it's like a couple points, right? Yeah.
Yeah. That's a massive gain considering what's happened in the past little while. But don't celebrate too soon, because Evergrande, they're being liquidated. But they're now a shadow of their former self. So it's more just a symbolic news story more than anything. But really, I think this is a good indication of what's going on with the real estate market in China. And that made a significant portion of their GDP. And that's going to take a real hit. And if China, something really happens bad with them, good opportunities maybe to move industry back to North America. But it's obviously going to hit the markets over here pretty bad.
I don't give a shit about this. I don't know what to say. Like, it's just all just made up. Like, all this wealth and debt, you know, especially when it comes to Chinese real estate, I guess, is what Evergrande is. It's all just made up. I'll note that we talked about on the show before, the problem with China is they originally thought that they could be this powerhouse supply economy. And they were, both on the good side and on the real estate side. They built these huge cities planning for monster decades of just like astronomical growth in their population and in their productivity. But they were never able to make the transition to a demand economy. And so they couldn't get that demand up. And now they have problems with all the CRE. That's a Chinese problem. The CRE problem extends to here as well. And I am looking forward to seeing what happens with the US FOMC meeting on Wednesday, talking about rates and whatnot, and seeing, you know, where the chips fall when it comes to the policy rate in the States. In Canada, we're in a bit of a different boat. And, you know, we talk about it a lot on this show when it comes to CRE, commercial real estate. There seems to be no desire by the most talented people to come back to the office, you know, taking a bus with a guy shooting up Trank and shitting on himself at the back, or going into a subway station where a naked man could push you onto the tracks at any moment, or
people pissing on the trains on TTC.
Yeah, or that, walking through a downtown core where everyone is either smoking cigarettes, smoking dope, some combination of the two, or is homeless. You know, unfortunate situation, don't get me wrong. But the point is that there is not much allure to the downtown lifestyle, you know, like there was maybe before COVID. And CRE is the main victim of all these changes in society. You know, not much else to say for now. Let's just leave it there and take Evergrande as your canary in the coal mine. If you have a lot of real estate that was built and is not being used anymore, it is a big liability on someone's balance sheet, and chances are it's not the only one. And that kind of stuff, you know, if you want to see what Cascade looks like, that's a pretty good domino. That's a big domino that's going to fall.
And there's a lot of superstition that's involved in China too. So when you move into a place, you want to be the first person to move in.
Oh.
So yeah, there's a stigma attached if you're buying it secondhand. So there's a lot to this. So the building of units, the building of, like, they want to leave it almost completed until somebody's ready to buy and move in. So there's a lot of moving parts here. But okay, more Clown World stuff. This is potentially Clown World Extreme. It's, I can't believe Reuters is fucking doing this. This is a story from Reuters, because they're saying, according to sources, the European Central Bank is asking some lenders to monitor social media for the early signs of bank runs. And last year we had Silicon Valley Bank, we had Credit Suisse. They went tits up. And according to this Reuters article, check the, like, this is incredible, John. I'll fucking quote this. In October 2022, a social media post from a journalist saying that a major international investment bank is on the brink led to a run on Credit Suisse, with clients withdrawing more than 100 billion Swiss francs. That's
what is this? An article is claiming this?
Reuters. I'm reading this right from Reuters, and they're saying that there's a social media post from a journalist that quoted that a major international investment bank is on the brink. And that led to Credit Suisse being subjected to a bank run. This is a tweet. I did some digging here from an ABC business journalist by the name of David Taylor. This isn't the ABC you're thinking of, Joey. This is the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Taylor, as of last weekend, had a total of 16,000 followers on Twitter.
Nothing.
This guy had so much fucking power, according to this article, that a single tweet from him can result in the end of a 170-year-old banking giant. This is truly Clown World Extreme at that. I don't think there's many people on this planet that could release a single tweet that could cause a run at a bank. Trump, Biden, Gensler. I mean, the list of individuals, governments, short. Yes, but individuals, this list has to be fucking Joe Rogan. Small.
Can Joe Rogan do it?
I don't think so. Prove me wrong, but I don't think he does have that power. But I can guarantee fucking to you that this guy, David Taylor, doesn't make that select list. He gets cut from this list early on. And they're saying in this article that a banking executive told Reuters that that the so-called liquidity coverage ratio, this is the LCR, key indicator to measure liquidity risk, should be revised. Newsflash. You can fucking change this to 100% or beyond. Until then, you're fucking insolvent. That's the only way to stop a potential bank run. If you're going to change this ratio, it's got to be 100% or greater. Anything below that, you are potentially subjected to a bank run. And the next bank that topples over, I can't believe that they're fucking saying this. The European Central Bank is saying this, because they're going to fucking scour Twitter. For everybody that makes a prediction out there, and who knows what's going to be the repercussions? Losing a job? Unable to access banking services? I don't know. Maybe forcefully having them listen to Bankless podcast. That could be pretty fucking bad, by the way. But
you'll be bankless if David Taylor tweets again, for sure.
It's bullshit. Like, how does the European Central Bank believe this is the case?
They don't. Dude. They fucking don't. This is the wedge in the door for making people verify on Twitter and policing all the social media stuff. In the Clown World North segment, I have like a comment I want to make about some stuff going on over here, but I'll save it. It is in the same vein though. You know, oftentimes you and I have spoken about the problems that governments are having. It's not with policy. It's not with indebtedness. It's not with, you know, the stuff that we throw accelerate on when we're retweeting nonsense from around the globe. The problem is with narrative. And because of stuff like Twitter and, you know, in this particular case, I think Elon's unwillingness to play ball with the powers that be, they're running into a problem that they didn't have 2 years ago. It's straight as that. Okay. There's nothing on the fringes here that's changed that much. You know, many times I'm sure over the last 20 years, there's been banks that have been close to insolvency or governments that have been running interference or weird financial instruments to save debt vehicles and save treasury markets and save repo and prevent, you know, overnight rate spikes and stuff like that, control the bond yield. This stuff has been happening a long time. And the difference now is that there's no stenographer to pen it for you and put it out there and be the only place to get that information. it just doesn't work. And so, you know, if Mr. Taylor can make that, you know, can he be the first snowflake in the avalanche? You're saying no. I'm saying that it's unlikely.
I don't fucking have a clue.
I'm saying it's unlikely, but it's definitely not impossible. You know, like I'll tell you my own experience with this. There was a FOMC press conference like late 20 probably, and some reporter asked Jerome Powell what he meant when he said that inflation was transitory. And Powell goes on this like minute and a half long monologue where it looks like he blacks out, honestly. Like he's tripping over his words. He's twitching a bit. This was before they sent him to Toastmasters when they realized everybody in the planet was watching everything this guy said and did. And he goes on this diatribe about what inflation is and why it's transitory. And I just recorded it. I played it back and recorded it on my phone and then posted it to Twitter. And the quote was just like, what in baby Jesus' name is this guy saying, or something like that. And that quote got like almost 10 million impressions, more than anything else I've ever written, anything else I've ever tweeted. Nothing even comes close. That was when I had like 1,000 followers. And so if I can get 10 million impressions with 1,000 followers on something like that, then if this guy strikes the right chord with the right group of people at the right time, he could do a lot more than 10 million. And if you get to 100 million and you're talking about a bank run on Credit Suisse, maybe you cross some kind of threshold there. So maybe he could do it. But the point I'm trying to make is that in this day and age, it doesn't take as much for the avalanche to start anymore. And I think it's coming at a bad time because there's just a lot more opportunity for avalanche in the financial sector than there was 5 years ago. And so when you put those things together, you wind up with a little more risk. And where there's more risk, there will be more attempts to control narrative and more attempts to crack down on speech and more attempts to crack down on anonymity and privacy and things like that. We're seeing all that stuff. And I would be careful when, not that you and me or people who are listening or watching this show would do this, but people who want to see things like anonymity disappear on the internet because, you know, someone said something mean to them one time with a Pepe avatar, like be careful, because if they can blame Credit Suisse on David Taylor, they could blame some shit on you too. You know, it wouldn't be that hard. And if things go sideways quick enough, they just might. They just might. So be aware of that.
I don't know what to think. To me, this is fucking clown world extreme that they could pin this bank going tits up because of a fucking tweet from some guy.
It was in the news for a long time. Like people were throwing darts at Credit Suisse for months before that. And
you know what it is? If a bank can disappear overnight, which would happen with Credit Suisse.
Yeah.
They're insolvent.
Yeah.
It's not a fucking tweet that did it. It was the actions that led to the bank being insolvent to that day.
For sure.
That's what caused it to be fucking insolvent. That wasn't the catalyst. It was true. Look at all the decisions leading to that point.
Like Zero Hedge getting a hold of some data and tweeting it is not the cause of the bank being insolvent. It's the bad decisions for the 10 years leading up to that moment that's the cause, right? But I mean, you and me both know, Len, that no one wants to take responsibility for that stuff. So they pin it on David Taylor. Can we get David Taylor on the show? He'd probably come on, eh? Good Aussie boy there. G'day, mate.
You got to do it because of the time.
I saw a great Instagram meme the other day of an Australian woman saying how I would never have the enjoyment of just like embracing the infinitely large number of unwritten letters in the word no, if you're an Australian. No, no. It's very funny the way that they say no. I don't know any other language that says it like that. No, no, no. I can't even do it. Anyway, this is a story for another time, but I would find that meme if I was you, listener, viewer, and listen to it. She does a good job with it.
Let's do Clown World North, because I think it's going to be a lengthy segment.
Probably.
I honestly think so. I mean, there's so much to talk about.
Some overlap between the stuff that I have and stuff you have.
I'll say one name, and I'm just going to not go any further. It's David Lametti. That's all I got to say. Nothing more. It's interesting.
No comment. Next story.
Election reform, baby. Election reform.
Hey, let's go.
Let's talk about this.
This is great for me because I have always thought that what this country needs is 3-day voting. That's what we need the most.
Well, I'm going to take a different point of view from this.
Here we go. Okay.
So first off, I have to say that Prime Minister Trudeau, he campaigned about 10 years ago on election reform. That was one of the campaign promises that he proposed prior to being elected prime minister in 2015. So I just want to throw that out there. But another thing too, I'll just talk about the election reform before I go any further. They're saying that they want to go ahead with some sort of election reform. And there's a few different ideas that are being thrown around. One is expanding the one-day voting to a three-day voting period during general elections. Allow voters to cast their ballots at any polling place within their riding. And the third thing they want to do is improve the mail-in ballot process with both accessibility and maintaining integrity in mind.
Oh, man.
Okay. Now, given what's transpired down in the States, the last point, it might be a sticking point for some. But I want to just say this. There was a chance to do some election reform in Ontario. I'm not sure if you remember this, Joey, but in 2007, during the general election over here in Ontario, we had a referendum at the same time. And that referendum was proposing changing the reform of the election, how it's done. And right now we have a first past the post, and they wanted to do a mixed member proportional system.
I remember
at that time, 2007, a long time ago. And yes, Ontario doesn't represent the whole country. 63% voted no. They didn't want to change. They wanted to keep the existing first past the post. So I'm just going to throw that in there. But yeah, so these changes have nothing to do right now, at least from what I'm seeing, about changing the first past the post to some sort of mixed member proportional system or anything along those lines. It's strictly just about expanding the 3 days, 1 day to 3 days, voting anywhere in your riding, and mail-in process.
This is completely insane, right?
Given what we see down in the States, potentially. Now, I could tell you, I'll give you a different view of this.
Okay, steel man it for the people who want to see these things.
Defend this, right?
Okay.
Votes happen, I think, for a general elections, I think on Mondays. So it's during the weekday.
Mm-hmm.
People now are more pressured than ever to do their job. And if they leave for whatever instance to do, like, their employers are going to look at them. So giving it a 3 day window might make it easier to cast a vote. I'm trying my best here, by the way. I hope I'm doing a pretty good job. Doing a ballot, submitting a ballot anywhere in your riding, gives you a greater geographical area where you could cast your ballot rather than the polling location that's near your house. Granted, you do have the ability now to do advanced ballots, I think they call it.
You can do advanced ballots.
That at the riding office. So you can do that, but they want to make it easier for everybody to do this. Okay, that's the idea. And the mail-in one, I can't defend. I don't know what the fuck to do with that one. For the first two, that's the best way I could defend it. So it's just for people because of busy schedules. Instead of 1 day, make it 3 days. And the second, well, make it a larger geographical area to submit your ballot. Makes it easier to submit your ballot. That's it. But that's the best I could do to defend it.
Okay. It's illegal to not let someone go vote during working hours. They get 4 hours, I think, to vote if they're scheduled to work during the ballots, during the ballot times. So polls open.
What if you work far away from your riding?
Flying fuck. Who cares? My next point is you can vote anywhere. I've been a university student away from home. I've been away from home on election nights. I've voted in many different places. All you need is your driver's license. They just put you on the roll. So unless that changed in the last little while, I don't know how that works.
Yeah, see, that's what I don't know.
I don't see what the problem is. And I'll tell you what else, okay? This thing, when I look at all these things, I'm not saying they're trying to steal an election, but I am saying that if you were trying to steal an election, these are things you would do. You would make it easier for people to just go wherever they want. It's more difficult to track. You'd make it easier for, I'm going to try and pick my words very carefully here. You'd make it easier over a 3 day period to make changes to your strategy to bring in voters as those tallies became known. I don't believe for a second that they wouldn't be counting tallies that entire 3 days, because exit polling would be something that was going on, right?
They don't have what they have here in Canada. They have scrutineers that go there to the polls and they have their voters list and they check off if their voter voted or not.
Yeah.
And if they see they haven't, then that's going to give them And that an indication that they're not getting their people out to vote for them.
Sure.
So that's, that's what they're using.
Whatever the case is. And so like the strategies that are available to help you illegitimately yank an election from the jaws of defeat, you know, there are more opportunities in this system than not, and certainly more opportunities in this system than the current one. Do you know what the list of nations is, you know, that runs an election like ours where there's not ranked voting or runoff elections that take more than a day? Do you know what the list is?
More than, like, I think that a lot of countries out there finish their process very quickly, very, very quickly. We had Argentina that did their runoff, like they had two elections in a month or 2 months time, whatever it was, but they were able to complete the whole process. In Argentina, I don't want to say anything disparaging about them, but...
But it's fucking a third world country, basically.
Well, it's not the United States. And does the United States... And I'm using that. I can't believe...
The United States does it because there was fucking cheating. Like, there's... Listen, whether you think the election was stolen or not isn't the point. Whether you think that Trump won or Biden won is not the point. The point is that if you give any political party of any color, any stripe, the opportunity to cheat, they're going to do it. There's so much at stake. Look at the net worth of winning politicians over the course of their time in office. Look at the net worth of the parties. Look at the donation numbers. Look at all the potential wealth accumulation that exists for the winners of first world elections. If you give opportunities to cheat, there will be cheating. Why do this? Why? It does not make sense. Someone needs to explain to me why they... If you're one of the people who thinks this is not about cheating, or at the very least, okay, even the normalist normie has to admit that at this moment, a change in election practices by the ruling party is done to give the ruling party a better chance to win. The normalist normie has to admit this. There's not been a single shred of reporting on this anywhere. Where's Nick Nanos on this? Where is Rebel Media on this? Where is any of these guys on either side? The reason that I'm talking
about it. I'm sure somebody's talking about it.
You and me are talking about it for sure.
Come on, we're not the only fucking...
I'm waiting for the Looney Hour to talk about it, and I'm waiting for the Strategist podcast to talk about it. And the Strategist podcasts are like dyed-in-the-wool NDPers, all of them, right? They're like all failed NDP consultants, basically, and now CBC contributors and other, you know, whatever, lucrative paying gigs for not knowing anything. But you got to explain to me how this is not just like a terrible thing to put out into the world for the ruling party. If this was, just consider for a minute, like, let's do a litmus test. If this was the conservatives doing this, what do you think the response from CBC would be?
That's a good question.
You fucking know what the response would be. And if it was Trump doing this in the States, what do you think the response from CNN and NBC would be? You fucking know what it would be. Why do we pretend that this is anything but an attempt to hold on to power? Why do we pretend this is anything but an opportunity to cheat for all parties, not just liberals, for all parties? Why pretend?
No, I'm shocked that they would...
They're going to put in legislation, electoral reform that gives them less of a chance to win. What the fuck are we talking about?
The best thing in terms of ensuring their chances of winning in the future would be to do nothing. And I'm going to stand on this. This is a hill I'm going to stand on and die. And the reason why is...
Give it to me.
In Canada, we have only had two parties that have ever governed. There was once a unionist party where parties banded together to form that, but I'm excluding that. Only two parties have ever governed in Canada. And it's probably going to be like that for the foreseeable future.
For sure.
It's not going to be like this indefinitely. So because you have these two parties, Party A and Party B, that have ever governed, and they're probably going to govern for the next little while, why would you change anything to disrupt that? It's just like in the United States, you only have two parties. Why throw in something to disrupt that? Leave it status quo. Today, you might be down and out, but in a few years, maybe in a few terms, it's going to be your turn to govern again. And it's just the cycle repeats itself over and over again. The Liberals, if you look at the polling right now, they're polling very badly. And they're probably
BQ, right. I think you said that the other day in one of our chats.
They're around there, which is,
it's
a chance that BQ could be the official opposition, which hasn't happened since 1983. So if you just wait it out, even though they're polling bad, just historically, the Liberals will gain support once the Conservatives eventually fuck up. because every party in power over time fucks up. It just takes some time to do it. Just this shit happens. So you just got to wait out. I don't know why they would institute anything. Just leave things alone. If I was in that camp, I'd say, you know what? We're probably going to lose this time, but we're going to win again in the future. Let's fucking do nothing. Let's not try to throw in anything into this. We do nothing. It will be our time to govern again in 1, 2, 3, or 4 terms, where the fuck it may be. But it will be our time again, almost guaranteed.
Let's move on. Not much else to say about that.
Okay. Another touchy one, Joey.
Love it.
Dying with Dignity Canada.
Holy fuck,
this is
man.
A group.
Yeah.
I got to talk about this. This is a group that's been supportive of... Oh, we lost you, Joey. Or is it me?
I can still see it.
Okay. So this is a group that's been supportive of medically assisted dying in Canada. This is MAID, right? And they've been sounding the drums that they want to have this eligibility of medical assisted suicide to be expanded to for as kids as young as 12. So right now, Canada offers medically assisted suicide to those who, even right now, they don't have death that is going to be in a foreseeable future. They've changed this recently for people that are in this class that are not going to die in the foreseeable future. They're going to be offered this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they have also opened the door for people to get this that are suffering from mental illnesses as well. But they're saying that this group would like to include kids as young as 12. And they're quoting this, eligibility form made for mature minors.
Unreal.
And yeah, so think of, you know, think of all the pressures kids are going through right now. If you're 12, 13, 14, and whatever your age you are, all the mental illnesses that are now being discovered and people are just suffering as a result of it, depression, bullying and shit like that. This happens with teenagers all the fucking time. All these factors play in with child's emotions. Plus you got to throw in puberty too. That's another thing that is just very difficult to equate. And man, who makes the decision here, right? Like it's, I don't know. The thing is, I see this and I understand how they want it, how it should be used. But it's the thing is, how it's going to be used is something that could be trouble. And I'll explain why. If there's a child out there, 12, 13, 14, let's say, and I hope there's nobody's in this position, but this happens all the time, that you have an illness that is just wrecking you and you have not much time it's going to be to live, and it's going to be a painful few whatever days, months, years, what the fuck it is. I, you know, as a parent, I would hate to see that happen, and I would explore the option to see if this can be, if something can be done to lessen the pain quicker. It's not just this, the cocktails of opioids and shit like that, something, because I would hate to watch a kid, especially my kids, suffer like that. Yeah. And I know what the end result is going to be. Very touchy situation. I hope to never be in that. So it's hard for me to say what would be my decision. So I can understand the rationale why they would want to open a door for something like this. But again, it's how it should be used and how it will be used are two different things. And like I said, children in their teens, even 12 is preteen, isn't it? Yeah, it is. It's mental illnesses, depression, all that shit, puberty. It creates all these, it muddies the waters. And then I don't know who's going to make the decision here. Is right now, I think kids can make decisions on getting, I don't know, don't know the right way to say it, but getting something that is going to change their identity moving forward, right? Can't they do that right now?
Yeah.
So what if they have the ability then to choose this, right? If they could forever change their body and they make the final decision, why can't they make the decision on this? I don't know, man. This is fucking, this is nuts.
It's an impossibly difficult conversation. And I don't know what to say. I have a friend who I won't name, who was the guy who was at the bedside of one of his childhood friends when his childhood friend died via medically assisted suicide. This is last year, or earlier this year, I should say. No, last year. I see Paulie in the chat saying his grandma chose it at 90. Len, you and I have a mutual friend whose mother chose MAID as her... you know, death vehicle, I guess I would say, some years ago. I'm not necessarily opposed to MAID. What I am opposed to is this idea that young people should be making decisions when they are at their most vulnerable that will affect them in ways that at the time are inconceivable to them because they just don't have the perspective and the point of reference to understand that. You're not in a position mentally, physically, emotionally, and, you know, honestly, hormonally between, like, I don't know, as a guy, I would say like 12 and 23 to make decisions like this. Like, yeah, I know I'm laughing a bit, but I can't think of a good decision I made fueled by emotion through that entire stretch of my life. And I would even say even further than that, you know, probably until I was like 25, 26, I really didn't think about things long term, you know, financially, romantically, professionally, almost at all ever. I was always living in the moment. And there's like a certain magic to that when you're a kid. You experience life in a way that you just can't when you turn 25 and 35 and 45, unfortunately, or fortunately, I guess, in some cases, but unfortunately in some others. And that magic is what really makes youth special. You know, it's why the older you get, the more you think youth is wasted on the young, right? But to go along with that, like I said, you don't really have an understanding of the permanence of some of the things you do and say and choices you make. And you also don't have a sense of how fleeting some of the feelings you have are. Nothing you think is serious when you're 15 is serious when you're 18, let alone 30, let alone 40. None of the things you think are serious when you're 20 are serious when you're 25. It doesn't go that way in life. And we're offering kids a way to make permanent the temporary emergencies of the moment in their, you know, hormonally unbalanced 5 or 10 year period. It's wrong. And we shouldn't be doing this. I should note, Len, that a little before the show, the government walked back the idea that mental illness can be the primary and only reason for medically assisted death just before the show started today. So I happened to catch it on Twitter. I didn't know if we'd be talking about it, so I didn't send it to you. But yeah, interesting, right? There is a lot of pushback here. And those lobbying groups, you know, there's money to be made there somehow. I'm not sure exactly how, but I will say that years ago or a year ago when this really started come to prominence, you and me covered a story that's been tweeted out a bunch of the last couple of days that, you know, there was some reporting and studies done on how much this would save the healthcare system. That shouldn't be part of the calculation. It's just not right. This is not what you expect from a first world nation. And you can define first world however you like, but to me, this is anything but. And making permanent the decisions that you make in a temporary, immature state is the worst kind of medical advice you can give. And MAID is exactly that. It is a permanent end to what would otherwise be a very temporary problem. Just completely ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. Unforgivable, yeah. I think.
Well, it's also, like I mentioned, it's a difficult position to be in if you see a young child that's been given a death sentence and they're going to live.
That's a different story. That's different. Right. I think that's different. Yeah.
Right. And I don't want to say that they should take this option. People should do whatever the fuck they want. Right. Like some people want to use something like this. Other people want to go other way. Like where the fuck you want to do, that's fine. But yeah, like I know this is made. Somebody made a comment. It was made for, or should be for older people and stuff like that. And you know they could go out with dignity and shit like that. That's fine. But yeah, like this is a discussion that we should be having because these guys are proposing it, and it's going to be scary. Especially you know all the fucking mental problems that our kids are going through right now, and it's getting worse. You know it's getting fucking worse. Like. If you go look at what's going on in cities, you mentioned earlier all the problems that's going on in the downtown core of Toronto, for instance, but like cities, they're pretty rough as it is. And then
yeah,
you throw in now, this is another thing that they consider like, oh man, it's very scary stuff. And yeah, we'll just talk about another time, I guess, once we get some more data on this.
Sure, sure.
We could talk about hospital wait times in Canada, and that's getting worse as well. Because I'm sure everybody has noticed this, right? Everybody that's gone to a hospital in the past little while, they'll notice that their wait times have shot up considerably. Yeah. CBC wrote a piece about this. And one of the causes of this increased wait time is probably the doctors per capita ratio. And in the past 10 years, according to the article, Canada let in around 5 million people. And this during that same time span of 10 years, medical schools are admitting now only 167 more doctors for mandatory postgraduate training. So in terms of that, we're bringing 5 million more people have landed in the past 10 years, but only 167 more doctors are being admitted annually through the nation. And this leaves a huge gap in homegrown doctors, and we have to make it up somehow. And in some cases, it's not, and the wait times increase significantly. And federal data suggests that we will need roughly almost 49,000 family doctors in Canada by 2031.
Insanely large number. Yeah.
And this is a few short years. So that number of 167, it's not going to be able to meet this. So Ontario, they promised to add another 449 postgraduate medical training spaces over the next 5 years. So by the time this finishes, the wait times are going to further increase. So then these, you know, you look at what's going on here. The federal government increased the amount of people coming in here. The provinces didn't change how many doctors are going to be graduating in throughout the nation. So there was a disconnect between sharing information between the federal government and the provinces. And now they're trying to pivot, and unfortunately it's too late. And now we're going to reap the rewards of this, which unfortunately is going to be much, much higher wait times in hospitals. So yeah, you see this and people are wondering why wait times are higher. Well, it's because there's less doctors per capita, and this is not going to be fixed anytime soon. This is going to be a problem for many, many years.
So I got a personal story to share. My Nona is 91, lives alone. My grandfather passed away a few years ago. He's 93. Famous Mediterranean longevity there in my bloodline, thank God. Lives alone, healthy as a horse, still does her own garden every year, still has us over for dinner every so often, cooks, whatnot, a little less than before, of course, shoulders and whatnot, you know, giving her some trouble these days. But on Wednesday last week, I get a call from my dad and he says, no one's in the hospital, she's not doing too good. So I called him back. I said, what's going on? Felt weak this morning, felt nauseous, and her heart feels like her heart's skipping beats. And so I thought, well, that's not good. And I went down to visit her that night with my uncles, my brother, my dad. And I haven't been to an ER in a few years. Since I tore my Achilles tendon, and I went to an ER on the mountain. Not one downtown, because I was still living on the Hamilton Mountain back then. And so I get to the ER, Len, and I park my car on the street, walk in. It's a fucking war zone. There's people on top of each other. It's loud, people moaning in pain. There's two people at the triage desk trying their best. God bless these nurses. Like we always say, it's not their fault. You know, it's no surprise the burnout's so high. People at the triage desk, I thought, the people who are there to be seen, thought broadly were well-mannered, but there's a few who weren't. A lot of people who couldn't speak English very well. And I'm not saying those are necessarily like, you know, I know we talk a lot about like Indian immigration here. I heard some other languages too. Spanish, it sounded like, Italian for sure. And a few others. You know, I think about my Nona situation. If my dad wasn't there to translate for her, you know, she very well may have been one of these people. And so I talk to the triage nurse and I say, I'm here to see my grandmother. She was admitted a little while ago. I don't know what room she's in. And, she's down the hall, in one of the like triage rooms. So I walk down the hall. In the hall, Len, it's like complete chaos. People on top of each other.
Hallway medicine is being administered, right?
Unbelievable. Not much medicine being administered. A lot of people waiting for hallway medicine, it looked like to me. And so I get to the end of the hall. My Nona's there. And my brother and my dad and, you know, my uncles are there, and she's in good spirits, thank God. And, you know, she was in that ER waiting room another 24 hours. So she got there in the morning that day and was there for close to, I guess, 36, 37 hours, basically in the ER triage area. Today, or Friday, I should say, she's supposed to have an echocardiogram. to determine whether or not she could have a pacemaker put in, because that was the issue. She was low on potassium or something and needed a pacemaker. So this woman who's been paying into the healthcare system since she was, I don't know, 25, something like that, when she came over, I guess she came over in late 40s, is waiting for an echocardiogram. She can't get the test because there's no techs working on weekends. I didn't realize that. Okay. So it's not the technicians who should be there to do the test are not there on weekends. That's a red flag for me. Today, thank God she gets the pacemaker put in. Everything looks to be okay. But that's an example of what the system you paid into is doing now. This links in nicely to a thing that I saw on Reddit today that I wanted to share that really pisses me off, honestly. It makes me pretty fucking mad. And it's a story on the mass immigration subreddit. And it says, Regina, it's a CBC story. Regina man waiting 7 years for mother's residency application says lottery system needs change. Here's a quote from the article. From the guy, we're looking for a permanent solution and she's getting older. Her health is not going to remain safe. Interesting. Another quote from the article. In 2019, the federal government gave at least 70 applicants spots to sponsor parents and grandparents in return for dropping lawsuits that claim the online application process to reunite immigrant families was flawed and unfair. So what are you getting here? You're getting a healthcare system where you pay in. You know, my grandmother raised 4 kids here. A number of grandkids, myself included, really put down roots and helped to build the country into a place that people want to come to. I'm happy about that. I'm proud of that. And what you have here is a guy who thinks that the lottery system is no good because his ailing mother wants to come here and use the healthcare system she never paid into. Get fucked is what I would say. You didn't pay. People who did pay are having a hard time finding care now. If you think it's sensitive now, if you think it's packed now, wait a few more years. Only going to get worse. The boomers are just now starting to age into healthcare problems, right? 60, 70, 80. You're going to see a real big strain on the system. And like we've talked about before, when you have fault lines that you can paper mache over with economic success, bread and circuses, and things like a functioning healthcare system, heaven forbid we have one of those, they don't really show up. But when some of these things start to fail, stories like this that the CBC thinks are human interest lead to issues. This guy's grandmother, I wish her the best, but the idea that she needs to come over ASAP because her health is not stable, she's never paid into the system, man. You don't get to come here and be a drag on the system.
They don't get to come in, period.
So they shouldn't get to come in, period, but it sounds like they do.
There's a few things. I don't know if things have changed. But I know a few years ago, the way it operated was you have to go through medical, they have to be scrutinized medically before you could come to Canada.
There's no way that happens now.
I don't know if they changed that. So I could talk about the way it used to be. And I know before the way it used to be, it was for parents and grandparents and so forth, they were a small number in the overall pie of that were coming to Canada. The reason why they do that is, at least the idea at that time was, they want to bring in people, economic immigrants, they want to bring in their spouses, their kids, because they're going to be contributing to society either immediately by working right away or in the future once the kids grow up and go to school and get a job later on. Mm-hmm. So there is a benefit to the economy and society as a whole, bringing economic immigrants and then their spouses and children as well. And the parents or the grandparents, because they're older, they're probably not going to contribute. They're probably not going to work. They're probably going to be more of a strain on the social services like healthcare. So they're going to get a smaller portion of that overall pie. And that's why the wait line for this guy, 7 years, now it's a lottery system. That's why it's like that. There's more people trying to apply. There's less people coming in.
And they say the number is about 76,000 people now.
I don't know if that's going up or down or anything.
And don't forget,
that's the rationale.
I want to point out too that I don't know, if every sitting government's been saying this for the last, so often, but I mean, I was told that we were importing doctors, nurses, engineers, things like this, Clearly, either we're not, or the credential system is busted, right? There's not like a blue seal. We can just give people an exam and say look, you can be an MD, a family doctor. I don't want you cutting anyone open. I don't want you giving anyone made, but you can see people and find out if they need, you can triage a knee problem or triage a, whatever. Like, I think about when I had a bladder infection in the summer, right? I go to the doctor, I give her the symptoms. She knows right away what the problem is, right? Like, that's a Wikipedia type thing, but you need someone who can give you a prescription. Great. We can't add to that pool of people. Like, what's the problem? The problem is either that the people are not capable or the bureaucracy is not capable or some combination of the two. We got to figure it out soon because this stuff is going to start compounding. And like I said, man, I'm glad my Nona got what she needed, but should a 91-year-old woman with a heart issue that's diagnosed, right, fairly quickly need to wait 3 days to have the work done and 2 days in the ER triage bed? You know, I don't know. I don't know what the story is there. I don't know what the immediate fix is, but fuck me if it wasn't like a eye-opening experience.
Yeah, they need funding. Need lots and lots of funding, and it needs to be funded yesterday. Now, the problem is by the time they're going to go ahead and have these doctors graduate in 5 years from now, it's just a reactionary thing. Yeah. We see this all the time, that a mess is created and the mess has to be fixed, but it's not a quick fix. You only realize you have to fix the mess after it's been created.
Sure.
And you could digest all the information and then you pivot, and then it's a 10 to 15 year, 20 year
I'm with you.
Process.
I'm with you. Yeah, I'm with you.
And then,
I'll just note that the $4 billion that we sent overseas to the Middle East for, like, you know, international feminist policies. I'll take this right from the website, the government website. International feminist policies, strong results for women and girls focusing on supporting vulnerable populations in Iraq, Syria, Jordan, and Lebanon. $4 billion since 2016. What could we have done with that for healthcare? You know, I don't know. Something, probably. It's a question of priorities and trade-offs. And again, I've said this many times on the show. It's not that I don't want to support these things. There are for sure disadvantaged women in places like the Middle East, thanks to religious barriers and other, you know, long-standing, you know, barbaric traditions that keep these people, keep them down, quite honestly, you know, to put it bluntly. But we have to choose what we do with the money that's available and the resources that are available. The thing that you find out, you know, over time in any version of reality is that nothing is infinite. You have to make choices. You have to make sacrifices. And some things just can't be saved. They can't be improved. And this is a good example of this. You know, we spent a lot of money doing stuff like this and we didn't spend money on healthcare, or spent a lot of money on, I don't know, how much should we give to Ukraine and weapons and funding and all that.
Hey,
right?
$4 million was apparently...
I know. Laundered, right? Lost. Stolen, laundered, lost, whatever. Like
officials in the military.
We were talking about this on the show before. Like the Ukraine on like the list. It's like the
corruption index list.
We call it the gold machine gun index, right? They're pretty high on the gold machine gun index, it turns out. How about that?
Well, before this invasion took place, it was a country that was known to have corruption issues. Those corruption issues didn't disappear at the time Russia decided to launch an invasion. One could make an argument, maybe those corruption issues escalated that's a different argument. But they existed before, they exist today.
Yeah.
So generally, when money is sent to a country that has high corruption, there's a strong likelihood that all that money is not going to end up where it should end up. It will end up in somebody or somebody's pockets.
With you there.
Maybe it'll end up in the Credit Suisse account and get rug pulled in the process. Because
Zoltan Pozar's got it. Do you want to do one more? I know I kind of jumped the shark there and took over the mic for a while, but if you want to do one more, I got time.
We'll do one quick one.
Okay.
Then.
Okay.
We'll end on a high note, I guess, because TD Bank was fined for anti-money laundering failures. Check this out. TD Bank is billion dollar company. Like it's in terms of Canadian banks, it's a giant. In the grand scheme of things, it's still a relatively big company, even in the United States. I think it's like top 20 bank in the States. I could be wrong, but it's around there. Anyways, the Globe reported that they now going to get a penalty, and it's going to be expected to be in excess of $10 million Canadian.
Whoop-de-doo.
And this is for, like I mentioned, anti-money laundering failures. And they are saying, remember, $10 million Canadian. This is being reported by Globe could be one of the biggest ever penalties imposed on a Canadian bank. How can a $10 million fine be one of the biggest fucking fines?
That's not even that, the Ukrainian warlords are telling you those are rookie numbers. You got to pump them up.
And I presume that the money laundering that they failed to deal with was all done in Canadian dollars. I thought Bitcoin was the only one that being done with money laundering. What the fuck do I know? I guess Canadian dollars also has that stigma attached to it now. But that's it. We'll leave it on that.
I love that.
Thought it was a funny story. One of the largest penalties imposed in the
bank.
$10 million. That's what a joke.
Oh man, that's great shit. Good show tonight. Thanks everyone. Chat buzzing as always. I really appreciate you guys coming. Make sure you leave a like on the video, please, and come back Wednesday night at 7 for Madex and I. Again, unpredictable. You never know what he's going to say. So I look forward to that one. If the show
goes live,
if the show goes black halfway through, you'll know what happened. In the meantime, take care of yourselves.
Don't be a cuck.
Don't forget, everybody, lots of other stuff on CBP Media Network, including Two Whites and a Blue, me, Joey, my brother-in-law, Mike, and our friend Will talk about all the problems millennials are having with finance, romance, and just getting by. If you like CBP, if you like the NHL 94 podcast, I guarantee you'll like that one. Search for it, Two Whites and a Blue, anywhere you get your podcasts. We look forward to seeing you.